From Rivers Barden Architects, this is Spork in the Road, a podcast featuring conversations with creative individuals about their path, craft, and passions. In this episode, our resident architects Joe Rivers and Kevin Barden visit with Greg Dean, a theater actor and director from Houston, Texas.
I mean, that's one of the things about catastrophic theater is many of us have known each other since we were like 15 or 16.
Wow.
You know, high school of the performing and visual arts. And, you know, this many years later to still be putting on plays with your friends, which is what you thought when you met, that's one of the luckiest things that's ever happened.
Greg Dean has been a player in Houston's theater scene for practically three decades, having spent much of that time as an actor and director with locally founded Catastrophic Theater. Joe and Kevin sat down with Greg to discuss his evolution as an actor and his approach to directing. Here's Joe, followed by Greg.
So, where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Born and raised in Houston.
Wow.
And yeah, I've lived here the whole time, except I took a break from theater in the late 90s and early 2000s and moved to California for the tail end of the dot-com business.
Ah.
So, you know, I was one of the only people from the acting world that I knew that went out to L.A. and never auditioned for anything. You know, I was either, I was like middle management for an online A&E site. And this was in the days, I think, before they had business plans, you know?
Oh,
so
yeah.
Nobody had really thought, I know what we'll do. We'll get all these liberal arts majors, throw a bunch of money at them, and somehow we'll get rich.
Makes sense.
And yeah. You know, it looked good to me. Yeah, I don't know what went wrong. But, you know, I was doing that, and then I, you know, got laid off at the same time everybody else in the city got laid off.
Yeah.
So my kid was 8 or 9 at the time, so I thought perfect opportunity to move back here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and almost immediately dove back into working in theater.
What was your background theater before you went out to LA?
Oh yeah.
In Houston here?
In Houston, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd been doing it since I was a kid, taking classes at the community theater. Well, the whole thing started because I, you know, like lobbied heavily to play Santa Claus in like the first grade play, even though he didn't have any lines. I knew all eyes were going to be on Santa. You know, I knew a good role. Even then, it was fun. I knew I could do this and then get rewarded or validated or something.
Right.
You know, it was like, this feels good.
Yeah,
everybody's
absolutely.
Looking at me. They're all smiling. It's wonderful.
What could be better?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, on some level, that's what it remains. You know, there's a maybe a sort of a slightly more profound thing behind it now, but ultimately, it is that it feels good to show off.
Yeah, sure.
But yes, theater is what I studied. I took classes at the little community theater when I got into junior high. I took the drama classes all through high school and then majored in college. So, you know, I didn't really plan for anything else, but like I said, I worked in the internet business. I've managed restaurants. I was briefly a headhunter for a corporate recruiting, you know, sort of boutique operation.
Wow.
I guess the last regular job I had, I was working a office admin for a global claims management service, and then we went for a long enough period without a natural disaster, and I got laid off, and you know, that was maybe one of the best things that happened to me, because I'd say for a year and a half, all the money that I was making was coming from theater. You know, that year on my taxes, I didn't feel like I was scamming anybody by saying actor.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun, and I haven't really changed that since then. You know, it's ended up really agreeing with me. I know that I'm a lot happier now.
Has your favorite role that evolved over the years? Like, what was your favorite role to play 20 years ago, and what's your favorite role to play today?
I think, one of the things that has changed since, like, I did a little over a year ago, got to tackle a role that I had done before in 2010, I think. Wallace Shawn's play, The Designated Mourner. And I think one of the things that, one of the differences was this time I wasn't worried as much about making something happen. You know, I think in 2010, we had been wanting to do the play for about 17 years at that point.
Wow.
So,
a little bit of anticipation.
We were feeling a lot of pressure, and, you know, it's like, this has got to be special, you know.
Damn it.
Try real hard. And the second time through, it just, it felt like a lot more relaxed. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't need to try as hard as as I did the last time. And I think just, you know, more experience, you know, more experience with all that, you know, it was like learning by working with the same group of people over the years. I mean, that's one of the things about catastrophic theater is many of us have known each other since we were like 15 or 16.
Wow.
You know, high school of the performing and visual arts. Mm. And, you know, this many years later to still be putting on plays with your friends, which is what you thought when you met. That's one of the luckiest things that's ever happened. You know, I just feel incredibly grateful for that. Some of my favorite people in the world, and I'm still getting to play with them.
How special.
That's
great. Yeah. Yeah, every now and then I'll think about that and kind of get a little choked up, you know. And but it's – I have to remind myself sometimes how rare it is. You know?
Yeah.
Thought.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the things, too, like, you know, Jason and I knew each other in high school, and we were friends then. And then college happens, and he's at NYU, and I was still in town at U of H. Then we run into each other. We start running into each other when he's back in Houston. He's starting up a theater company, and I'm working with another new company. And, yeah, I mean, it was almost inevitable because we were both trying to do pretty much the same thing. And, you know, our goals aligned so beautifully that the, and all of our friends, you know, they wanted to do the same stuff. So, yeah, it was it feels like, you know, it was bound to happen, you know. A couple of avalanches rolling towards each other.
don't force trying to keep them away from each other.
No.
Don't force it. Don't force it.
It's fatal.
Yeah. So what was that transition like from actor to production, from being the producer and the director?
Well, the first play that I directed, okay, yeah, that was a friend of mine who is now enjoying a successful screenwriting career. He had started a theater. I think it was the second brand new theater that I was a part of. And we were going to do Eric Bogosian's Talk Radio. About the incendiary radio host, and I was going to play the guy, and my friend was going to be directing, and then I think he stayed up watching the movie one night, and the next day he said, "Hey, can we switch? You direct, and I'll play the guy." And I said, "Okay," because I'd been, you know, I'd been toying with the idea of getting into directing plays. So we did that, and it worked out pretty well, and it was fun. And then the second show, I started out wanting to do Eugene O'Neill's The Iceman Cometh, which is a cast of about 20 people. You know, one of the darkest, dankest, saddest plays ever, you know. And first rehearsal, only about 9 of the 20 people showed up, you know.
Ooh.
It was like, well, we were a ragtag bunch back then, you know. And we had more lax discipline than, you know. But I saw also that there was no way we'd be able to do the play with this kind of vibe. So I canceled it that night and decided instead to do a 3-character play by Richard Foreman called Samuel's Major Problems. I'd never seen any of Foreman's plays. I just read them, and I'd read his theoretical writings, and I was young enough and overconfident enough that the stuff that, you know, had I waited a few years, it would have stopped me. But, you know, I didn't know how much I didn't know So I was able to just kind of dive in and trust myself, you know, the arrogance of a 25-year-old who's pretty certain that he's going to turn the world of whatever discipline he's in upside down. You know, that that experience of being able to sort of build a world and direct the show, and I also played Samuel in it. And, you know, I was definitely like thought of myself as the Gulf Coast Orson Welles with all of the ego. So, yeah, that was the second one. And then I don't know, our first year working together at Infernal Bridegroom Productions was just going so well that Jason and I met after a rehearsal and drank a lot of beer and ate a lot of chips and salsa right over there at Chapultepec.
Oh, yeah.
And planned out our second year, you know, and he was directing half the shows and I had to direct the other half.
Wow.
You know, yeah, it was our ambitious 10 shows in 12 months season.
Wow.
Yeah, you can only do that if you're like 25, 26 years old. You can only do that then when you don't know that you can't do that.
Wow.
Yeah. So how many did y'all follow through?
We did,
on
we
that?
Did, wow. We did. We completed the season.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and I was in a lot of the ones that I wasn't directing, and I was in a lot of the ones that I directed too. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Holy buckets.
It was crazy. We did, you know, Chekhov. We did George Buchner's Voitsek.
Wow.
We did Eugenie Ionesco. We did Guys and Dolls. We did
Some small productions.
Yeah, exactly. It was insane, and we, you know, I think the only reason we ended up with that schedule is because we were drunk by the time we wrote it all down.
I'll sign here, and then we'll really do it.
Right. I guess this is legally binding. Yeah.
That's never happened in this office.
No.
Decisions made over shots.
Do you write material as well for?
I have adapted stuff before. Donald Barthelme's Snow White, a short novel from the mid-60s, I'd been working on off and on for 20 years, and we finally presented it April of 2017. And that was a lot of fun, but now I'm without, you know, that white whale project. Yeah, I got to figure out what's the next one going to be. And I've done adaptation, but I haven't written original stuff. Mm-hmm. I think I'm more of an interpretive artist than, you know, generating, you know, material from thin air.
Sure.
I tend to need to see something in front of me and respond to it.
There's a certain elegance of that, of just how
I love it. I love it. And I really respond to kind of, you know, more, I guess, abstract or surreal writing than I do the realistic, well-made play, as a director, at least.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, mm-hmm. I like the stuff that lying in bed at night, I wake up and say, I know. you know,
the 3 a.m.
They chase each other around with apples and sticks and try to hit each other with them, you know, which really did happen in one of our plays.
It's a love story. It makes sense.
It was just a section that every time we got to it in rehearsals, it would be, you know, what are we doing here? What's going on? It's like, I don't know. And then one rehearsal, I just kind of shouted, I've got it.
Ding.
Yeah. And it was the most ridiculous solution, but just it kind of you know, it fixed a play that this section where we just ground to a halt every single night.
Whoa, yeah.
I don't know where it came from, except that we had those objects on stage. Yeah, in everything that I've ever worked on, there's always some hole in it somewhere, mm-hmm. that you know, it's like that's where the problem is, and I tend to just trust that eventually it's going to come to me. And yeah, you know, we are working on deadlines too.
Sure.
You know, as we got the opening scheduled, so it's got to come. But sometimes I think it's just a matter of standing up, saying, "I know what we'll do," without having any idea what you're going to do. And by the time you're up on the stage with them, you know you've got to have something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that at least shakes the brain loose a little bit and starts something going.
What is the creative process to make those decisions? Is it a lot of I know what we'll do and really having to force yourself to get something out? Or is there another creative process that's more of kind of a slow burn?
I think it's a little of both. Mm-hmm. I am a research and preparation nerd, you know. Mm-hmm. I love to immerse myself so deeply that my girlfriend is saying, would you stop talking about this? I'm sick of hearing about it, you know. But it is this kind of total immersion for a period of, you know, 6 months to a year, or in the case of Snow White, 20 years.
Wow.
You know, one of the things that I do a lot is I'll start designing sound for a show, even if I'm not the sound designer. That, for some reason, really gives me a doorway in. But I do a lot of stuff. I do a lot of preparation, research, learn everything that I can. And then once the rehearsals begin, if I've done it enough, you know, that's sitting in the back of my head, yeah. And it's stuff that I can pull from whenever I need it, you know, if I need it. And often, it'll just inform a decision that I made without even knowing it.
Right. It's keeping that treasure trove in the back and collecting as much to...
I think it's a very much a left brain, right brain thing, you know? And I'm glad that I enjoy that part of it so much, because if I didn't, it would be very tedious. But you know, just reading everything that I can, consuming. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of, you know, there's no time once you get to rehearsal. Right. To, you know, share your theories or research, because everybody's looking at you saying, what do we do now?
Right, right.
But it's in there, you know. Right. It's it's in there.
What's been the big takeaway from directing? What have you really learned? And
I think it was the fact that you have to be able to take a deep breath and let go, because you know, live theater, something's going to go wrong every night. Period. So, being able to, at a certain point, just kind of let go and exhale and watch and enjoy it.
Mm. Let it take
let
on
it
the
turn
life.
Into what let it's it... going to be anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you can steer it for a while, but eventually, you know, you've got to, yes, the car careening down a hill, you've got to, you know, put the toolbox on the accelerator and jump out the door and let it do what it's going to do.
Yeah. Pull up a lawn chair. And...
Holding on too tightly does tend to, you know, eventually I think damage something like that, you know, and no one ends up really finding, it doesn't end up growing, you know. I don't want to make something that is, you know, dead on arrival, opening night, and it doesn't change after that. You know.
Right. Joe and I will talk about that a bit in architecture as well, of all this preparation, all these kind of things, you know, to cut the ribbon and the building is open, now you're finished, right?
Mm-hmm.
But precisely at that moment, that's when it starts to live.
Yeah.
You know, that's when it actually starts to do the thing that you've
the
been
thing
wanting.
It was built for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in that same way, it's like, you know, the curtain goes up and now it's time to shine.
If I'm not in the show, I do tend to not go back and watch it a bunch, which you know, I used to think that made me a bad director, but actually it's just like, if I don't have a job to do, then there's no reason for me to be there breathing down everybody's neck.
And I would think I mean, a lot of times it's like for the next project that we think about, it's like, okay, now we have to get ready to immerse ourselves in the world of the next one.
There's also definitely that. And because I get so excited about that, I'm ready to move on. Almost immediately.
Right.
I mean, you know, if I have directed something and I'm in the show, I will be there every night. Mm-hmm. And if something, you know, like grossly sloppy starts happening and it happens more than once, I'll say, you know, just deliver a gentle reminder, you know. Right. But I don't, even if I'm there every night, I don't tend to give a lot of notes after that point. You know, it's like no, I'm just an actor now. Get to enjoy the ride with everybody else. man, this was so much fun.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Really great.
For more information on Greg, including current and upcoming shows, visit catastrophictheater.com. That's catastrophictheater with an R-E.com. A special thanks goes out to our guest, Greg Dean, to our interviewers extraordinaire, Joe Rivers and Kevin Barden, and to everyone out there listening to Season 2 of Spork in the Road podcast. This episode was written, produced, narrated, edited, and music by Scott Barden. For more information on Rivers Barden Architects and Spork in the Road podcast, visit riversbarden.com.